This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
And like everyone's looking to the, well, the national deal's getting bigger and bigger. And it's like, All right, well, this is also their cash on hand. Like we've seen a lot of, we've seen a lot of, because I believe the Braves are also another FanDuel.
Yeah, but they're like their own, like.
Correct.
They're separate like, from.
The Cubs have not had success with the Marquee Network.
Yep.
And even the Cubs were like, because their fans were getting upset, like, this family has all this money and they're not spending. It's like, they thought they were going to have a lot more money than they do have. And it's like, you can't just say those are IOUs on, like, you sign somebody for that, you pay them for that.
Yep.
Like, you can't just have the IOUs. And so there's kind of the whole, Silver's even been talking about the state of the local TV deals. I guess, though, go back to your point on the other types of vets. Because the money is, like, clearly the money's drying up.
Yep.
But I think the problem is.
I could throw some names out there.
Let's hear them.
I think when you're talking mid-level exception, you're going to get a guy who's a replacement starter level player. And mid-level exception for the Grizzlies, you're talking non-taxpayer.
Yep.
I don't know how many teams have the non-taxpayer, but my guess would be probably maybe half the league, maybe a third, probably half the league is around the non-taxpayer.
How many taxpayers even are there?
Yeah.
It's around that mark. It's close to that.
Yeah.
Halfway, maybe 40-ish percent. I was looking at this the other day because I was like, what is the MLE? Like, what is the number that they're able to use?
Yeah, it's a little bit over 14 million.
Yeah.
Which is very desirable in
14, you nailed it.
Yeah, 14 teams.
Yeah, and obviously, like, the Suns are one of those. But are they going to be next year? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why that Suns pick swap's looking real nice.
So here are a couple names for me. I think Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
Okay.
Yep.
That's a good one. That's a guy who has produced well in the playoffs. He hasn't so far in this run, but
I'd take him.
Yeah. Great defender.
Yep.
Can shoot. Can play multiple positions.
Not a wuss.
A dog.
Yes. Continue.
So, that's one that stands out to me. But then that's like the mid-level guy.
Yeah.
That's to me, he's a mid-level target. When you talk minimum guys, I think it's a little bit different. I'm not – now, this is going to throw people for a loop a little bit. What about bringing De'Andre Melton back?
Oh, listen, I'm a Melton stan. Like,
what about
– I think what drives me insane about them is they fall in love with people too quickly, and they also bail on people too quickly.
Mm.
Like, Melton had that one playoff that was up and down.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you know what he also had?
Mm-hmm.
He had a playoff that also was up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, there were some bad – at least when he was on the floor, something happened. And then, conversely, in the most meaningless season ever, you fall in love with Vince and with Gigi. And I'm not saying that they don't both offer something.
Mm-hmm.
But that season was meaningless.
Mm. I got another one for you.
Let's hear it.
Now, the injury-prone guy, but...
Okay,
we're talking...
Come on, he fits right
on brand.
Come on.
On brand.
Malcolm Brogdon.
I need to see the physical first.
I do too, but we're talking
I'm betting his agent will not let us.
That's just cheap. Yes.
Uh-huh. Multiple position guy, can defend, can shoot. Like, I'm on board with that. If, like you said, the physical.
Yeah.
Those are three names that really stand out to me. But then you'd have to really get into the weeds.
What was D-Melt's injury? Did he go knee this year?
Yeah, I think it was ACL. But even initially, I think it was like a partial.
Honestly, if it's an ACL,
it wasn't.
Fine.
I don't think it was a full tear. It was like a partial
ACLs,
thing.
We figured that one out.
Yeah.
Give me an ACL over
Modern
Achilles.
Science got that. Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we get back, let's get into the actual games from last night. We'll talk about and more. Jason Smith also coming up later this hour. Stick around, you're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. In about 20 minutes, Jason Smith's going to join the program. Looking forward to talking with him. Before we do that, let's get into the list. The NBA playoffs. All right, DeMichael, we had another shocker.
Mm.
And I guess by another shocker, it happened again. In Boston.
Man.
But that meant until they tipped off in Oklahoma City, we had played six games in the second round. Underdogs were 6-0, and all six road teams had won. Then obviously the Thunder did what they did to the Nuggets last night. But this is kind of what I wanted to ask you about. So I am citing The Athletic.
Mm-hmm.
Playing at home just doesn't mean what it used to in the playoffs. This spring, NBA teams are just 26-24 at home in the playoffs. That's the lowest playoff winning percentage amongst home teams since 1981, with the caveat the 2020 playoffs were in the bubble. Mm. While home teams were a game under 500 in the 1981 playoffs, it was a blip. The next year, home teams won about 60% of their playoff games and kept climbing back each year right around the historical precedent. In fact, home teams won at least 60% of their games in 56 of the first 78 postseasons, but not recently. Home teams haven't crossed the 60% threshold since the 2018 playoffs, though they were close in 2022. Home court advantage has eroded this decade in the most critical circumstances, Game 7. Getting to the play, the do-or-die game at home used to be a ballast for higher seeds. That's the most athletic adjective. the thesaurus feature. They won 79.1% of Game 7 since 2021. When the Warriors won in Houston on Sunday, it could hardly be a surprise. The question is, why? So the two theories for me,
mm-hmm.
and you see if you buy either.
Okay.
Number one, I don't think teams have ever collectively taken the regular season as less serious than they do right now, collectively.
That's very fair.
So because of that, the seeds are all screwed up. And so you could have a team like, you know, for instance, we have the 1 and the 4 in one series, and we have the 6 and the 7 in the other in the West. Like, yeah. So, okay. So seeding is screwed up. Therefore,
and the 7 was the favorite.
Right.
This wasn't some
Correct.
Big upset. Yeah.
Correct. So I think the only team in the Western Conference, the Nuggets were favored. I beg your pardon. The Clippers were favored over the Nuggets.
Yeah.
But the Warriors were favored over the Rockets.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember if the Lakers were favored.
I think the Lakers were favored.
Yeah. I can't remember.
They were.
Because it was such a bloodbath. You move on. And then the other one is just, this is what happens when everybody's just shooting threes. And the game, like, it's just the high variance. And so
it's more of a math equation.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which is what we've turned the NBA into. Mm-hmm. You buying either. And you don't have to, by the way.
I'm not buying the second one.
All right.
But the first one, I'm very much on board.
The great Steve Kerr agrees with the second one.
He does?
Quote, I don't know that it's quite as important. Mm-hmm. I think the three-point shooting is such a variable. It feels like in the old days, it was much more of a grinded-out two-point game.
Mm.
It just didn't feel like the opponent had as much of a chance to suddenly get hot and take over the momentum of a game. As Kerr said, three-point shooting has invariability. Is that even the right word to say? Three-point shooting has invariably had an impact on the changing structure of the league.
Home court advantage started to wane during the 16-17 season, right as the NBA hit its three-point revolution, and has not recovered since as the three-point volume has gone up. Taking more threes as a road team has correlation with higher winning percentage in recent years. This postseason, road teams that have taken at least one more three-pointer than the home team are 12-9, winning at the same rate as they did last spring. To your defense, that tells me nothing. That's totally sampleless. By the way, what about the home team that jacks up 63s?
Boston Celtics.
It is unbelievable. When you cut it to think that, what'd they go last night? Was it 15 of 40?
It's 25%. I believe it was 15.
They've been 20. They're now
25 of 100.
And look at the Timberwolves, too.
They're now 25 of 100 for the series. They've shot, so they shot 40 and 60.
Yeah.
And they were 25% in both games.
And the Timberwolves are 12. And what, 76? Was that?
Well, the thing was, as everyone was going bananas on Monday night about how bad they were from three, they were better than they were in the Lakers closeout game.
Yeah. They were terrible that game, too.
So,
T-Wolves in that game from three.
I think they finished like 17%.
5 of 29, 17.2%.
And I believe in the closeout game, they were like 14.1.
It was horrible.
I mean, for the record, it was like one more make.
I think it's like 12-76 over the last
correct.
Two games.
It's
like
horrific. The thing, though, that doesn't make any sense to me is, can y'all think of a playoff game we've seen this far, this playoffs, where teams are trading blows? It just feels like when one team gets hot from three, the other's cold, and then it flips at some point. Like last night, for the second time, the Celtics get up 20. And you can always pinpoint when that is.
Yeah.
It's when their little flurry of threes go in and New York's not making anything.
Yeah.
But then it will always flip and New York will start making threes and Boston makes nothing.
That is the other side of it.
But like, have we seen one where like teams just start trading haymakers, just bombing away? Like, it feels like there's always one team's hot
really,
on and the other team's off.
We haven't seen much of that. No,
not really that I can think of. I mean, I'm even trying to
There was the one, I think it was Houston Golden State game when Curry was shooting well and Fred VanVleet
was that game four?
VanVleet was shooting well. Because Houston won because VanVleet made like.
Is this game six?
I think it was a little early in the series. It may have been game four.
Six? No, the Warriors didn't make anything in six.
Yeah, it may have been game four.
They were only 30% from three in game six.
But VanVleet had, he made a bunch of threes and Curry was making some threes. And they were going back and forth. But, like, overall, like, I mean, to your point, it's not been a lot of teams going back and forth from three-point range.
Yeah,
maybe not even from just three-point range,
yeah.
But like we've seen these really big runs from teams in specific spots. It feels like the most actively competitive series so far was that Knicks-Pistons series, where even though there were the big runs that helped define certain games, for the most part, it were just those teams just beating each other up.
Yeah.
Well, like I felt like those games were defined by the last 5 minutes. If anyone scored once, that was enough to put you over the hump. Because like
it's like the equivalent to a 10-0 run.
It's you're like, wait, the score's still 98-97?
Yeah.
It's like I feel like it's been that way since the 4-minute mark. Like that was the other one.
Mm.
I guess the other question though that I've been having is like last night, if you want to be like prisoner of the moment, like I thought Jokic in game one, like even though SGA's numbers were great, I thought Jokic clearly won round one.
Yeah, it's like he took his chain. Like,
and then
I'm the MVP.
Yeah, well, it was to me, and I don't even know if it's because I said this. Like, I don't know if it's fair to SGA. The big difference to me in game one was Gordon and Murray were good.
I mean,
but you saw the formula for Denver if they're going to do it.
That's how they got
to
do it.
Jokic has to be insane. And then the other two have to be very good.
Just to get a buzzer beater,
correct.
By the
just to win.
And some missed free throws.
Missed free throws and terrible coaching decisions. Like, you had to have everything break the certain way.
Yep.
And you had to hit a
40 and 20.
Correct. A 40, 20, and 10 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
11, whatever it was. The flip side with SGA, though, is like, I just feel like as good as he is,
you can take the ball out of his hands, and you cannot take the ball out of Jokic's hands.
Impossible. Can't take it out of his hands, yeah.
But I also don't know if that's fair to SGA, because who was in game one, who was the second best player on the Thunder that night? I mean, was it Caruso?
I mean, I was going to say he was the best, probably. But yeah, I mean, he was the best.
I mean, I'm going to, I'll give SGA had 31-10. Yeah. Not trying to like.
Caruso was second best.
That's the problem.
And he came off the bench.
Correct. Like, Chet, where are you? Jalen, where are you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not asking Lou Dort to do that, but like, where are the other guys? And then last night, the game completely flips in that almost everyone that you needed for the Thunder to be good were good, and it just becomes an absolute bloodbath. Was there anything else that stood out to you? Because the thing is, if you flip the games, this series makes more sense to me. Denver would have gotten blown out on whatever, the 36 hours of the turnaround from game 7, and then they win game 2, I'm like, well, that kind of makes more sense. But it was almost like,
that was flexing muscles, man.
Correct.
Like, well, all right, let's lock in. We know what we got to do. You know, there's this thing with the young teams. How are they going to adjust from game to game? OKC really isn't as young as their age. Like, people keep getting caught up in that. But they had the playoff run last year. But even before that playoff run, like, these guys have played together for a while for the most part.
Well, this has been the other thing we've been talking about on the show. Yeah. Everyone keeps going when you have the youngish team, like, oh, they just got to take their lumps. They'll figure it out eventually. What people are missing right now is, like, y'all, with the young team, the window is, like, way shorter than you think, because then you got to start paying everybody.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we just talked about these aprons and, look, Sam Presti, executive of the year, he's already got the short end of the stick on that before when they couldn't pay James Harden. So
there's also
the urgency.
There's
is
so
now.
Much revisionist history on that one.
I mean, is it?
There is.
He was bad in that finals.
They got. But he was sixth man of the year. Pissed at him because he wouldn't stop going to the strip clubs in Miami.
he played in Oklahoma.
Correct. And then he wanted like 56.
Yeah.
And they offered him 52.
Uh huh.
But the real reality was, Daryl Morey said, I'm going to build the entire thing around you. Mm. And he wanted to go be the man.
Get to be the man, yeah.
Like, he didn't want to stick around as the third guy. Like,
that's what he was going to be.
Right. Yeah. And Houston strip clubs, OKC strip clubs. James got his number in the rafters. Like, it's like he did what he wanted to do. And that's what bothers me. It's like,
yeah, this situation is different when you look at it. Like, yes. Like, these James Harden was like, that was the difference. Though James Harden was McDonald's All American, all that. These guys are kind of,
well, where this could wind up mattering.
Yeah.
I mean, what if Chet actually starts to like be what he was promised, and then Jalen starts to be what he's promised? Well, now you got three guys.
You
got
to choose at that point.
Correct.
You got to choose. That's the only way out of that.
All right, now let's get back to the Boston series.
Mm-hmm.
Is Jason Tatum the perfect player for the year 2025? In that, I feel like,
explain.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I got some thoughts on Jason Tatum, but I got to know where you're going.
I should say this.
Yes.
For the internet culture of 2025. Because he feels a lot to me like the real, like the rich man's version of Dylan Brooks, where kind of whatever your opinion is, and I'm not talking about as a player.
Yeah. I get you.
But yeah. Dylan's, because I always wanted to say this, I was Dylan agnostic. Dylan stands, y'all wrong. Dylan haters, y'all were wrong. It was somewhere in the middle. This idea of the Bill Simmons, Tatum's the third best player in the world. Tatum.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
He's not.
Clearly.
But the idea that Tatum.
Steve Kerr needs some apologies, by the way.
Well, like, I mean, was it Durant?
Needs some apologies.
Who, like, in hindsight, played it so perfectly, and I don't think he got enough credit at the time? Halliburton.
Mm.
I think
And, like, I get it. Mm-hmm. You're Tatum. Team you just USA, want to touch. Yeah. But, like, Halliburton was just like, isn't this fun?
Right. I get this. Yeah, I'm sitting on the bench.
I'm having here. A great time like, in Paris, I'm guys. Here. Like, it's awesome.
Go team. Like, he played it perfectly.
Yeah.
And, but, like, there's this, there's somewhere in between everyone that wants to just kill him.
Mm-hmm.
You're wrong. But the people that want to insist that he is truly one of the five best players alive, you're wrong too.
You want to know my take?
Let's hear it.
What is really different with Jason Tatum and Paul George?
Other than
he is surrounded by a better infrastructure.
Okay, we can go back to Indy. I need to know where do you fall on the Paul George spectrum?
I think Paul George was as good as Tatum is now when he was in Indy.
Because part of this is
number 24. Part of this Eastern Conference Finals, Paul George.
Part of this is because there's certain people that, like, I think Paul George was really good.
Yeah.
I never thought Paul George was built around him good.
Is Tatum built around him good?
That's the problem.
I mean, Tatum's never been in a situation where it's been built around him, technically. Jaylen Brown was there before him.
My thing with Tatum is I've always felt like Tatum is basketball Triple H. And here's what I mean. He is not the best at anything he does, but he's pretty good at everything.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. Triple H was never the best on the mic. He was not The Rock on the mic. He was not Stone Cold on the mic.
Yeah.
But he was pretty good on the mic.
For sure.
He was never the greatest in-ring wrestler, but he was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the most physically imposing, but, like, had the look enough.
Yeah.
Like, everything about him was just really, really good. It was like B-plus everything.
Yeah, good entertainer. Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, like, I was thinking about that last possession with Tatum last night. Forget the last shot. Or whatever we're calling that. Guys, he almost lost the ball three times before he even got to where, when he was just running around in circles.
I couldn't even tell where he wanted to shoot because he's just freestyling.
I couldn't tell like if he was expecting like a back screen that never came or.
Stars have signatures. If Kyrie Irving would have had the ball right there, I know he's getting to the sidestep at the right wing and he's about to shoot that three. Michael Jordan's got the ball right there. You know he's trying to get to the mid range.
Yeah.
He's going to try to do step back. Pool, he's trying.
Yeah,
pool.
To your point, they all have spots. Yes.
What's Tatum's spot?
So that's why, honestly, I think when I went back and watched it this morning, I think what happened was I don't know if Brown got caught up in traffic.
Yeah.
But I think the reason why it looked like he was running around with like a chicken with his head cut off was because I think what he was trying to do was get everybody to suck in on him. And he was trying to kick it to Brown at the elbow three.
Yeah.
And then what happened was either he didn't think he could make the pass, or then he got, maybe then he was like, oh, now I think I can get to the rack. I'll take that. And then he's like, oh, no, I can't.
I think that's where his mind was first. I think he wanted to do the same thing he did and then the possession and then before.
That dunk, but the possession before. But even if he was going for the kick out, and because this is... ended up not even being just, obviously it starts out with the one-on-one with Robinson at the top of the key, and then, but where it kind of gets congested and where Bridges ends up being the big help defender there is, it was one-on-one Bridges on Brown in the corner.
In the corner.
Just like what happened in game one, if that pass goes out there, he's just going to face him up for the ball. OG was under the rim, kind of just hand fighting. Robinson slides. OG is there for help.
Yep.
Okay, you're in the torture chamber now.
Now you got nowhere
to
go.
You have nowhere to go. And Mikhail just says, oh, a free basketball. Thank you very much.
All right, we got to get to Jason before we do that. Can you, along the same lines, though, this is reminding me of, I think we actually have an epidemic of this in the NBA. I do not remember the frequency and the rate of players leaving their feet with not really having the intention of doing anything. I feel like more guys now are jumping and don't know what they're going to do with the basketball than ever before. Why is that?
I don't know.
Because like, I'm not of the opinion these guys
are now, bad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I've never, I feel like the, and maybe is it
they're whistle baiting?
Well, I was going to say, they got used to getting the calls in the lane, and they're
part
not.
That's of it, I think.
Yep.
They have kind of integrated these new moves in the game, you know, like the slow step and things like that are designed to slow the game down for you when usually you'd be going up
Hold
for
on.
A shot.
This just triggered the other thought.
Yeah.
Did Cat not walk on that play?
Oh, of course he did. He went to, yeah. Of course he did.
I thought he walked twice.
Yeah.
One.
And he's a big dude, so it's not hard to tell.
But what drove me insane was Boston. I would have thought they would have been going bananas. It looked like, A, he did the classic up and down travel, left his feet.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. They didn't call that.
Uh-huh.
And then his pivot foot didn't slide. Like, it just walked. It just moved an entire
like
step.
Like
an
electric slide. Just
and then he just, then he threw the ball, because he had the look on his face like,
am I getting away with this?
Really?
Need the time?
Big gulps, huh? Like, I still, the fact that, like, but, like, Boston didn't even react, and, like, watching an NBA team not react is.
Mazzulla's been getting some, he's getting a little heat right now.
This, I just feel like he's under the same, like, when you are the system guy and the system doesn't work.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason joins the program. We'll talk to him next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at JasonSmith929. Jason, did you have Penny Hardaway defending Nico Harrison on your bingo card?
No. But he is a Nike guy, former Nike guy. So we get it because Penny's lifetime Nike. So you can understand. I mean, I'm sure Penny's known Nico probably for a long time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me. It was really what Mike was saying, you know, Mike about the, you know, sort of balls of this for Nico and, you know, that's kind of where I got stuck is because you can plan for the right now and how good it would have looked, right, especially defensively if you've got a healthy Anthony Davis and a healthy Kyrie Irving. But here's the thing. Look who you're banking it on, Data Davis, number one. And, yeah, it's looked good here recently, but we know his history, and then he goes down the first game. But then also Kyrie, you got to think that the formula that worked for you last year didn't just include Doncic. It included Kyrie and included both of those guys on ball. And sort of splitting that up, when you subtract Doncic and don't put another ball handle with Kyrie, you are now sending that, as DeMichael would know, that usage rate now goes up through the roof. Mm. And so the idea that you would get a now, right, whether it was this year or even a full regular season next year, asking Kyrie essentially to do more, not a little bit more, a lot more. You're the only guy we got now to be this. It's not a splitting like you sort of had on that finals run. It was dumb. It wasn't ballsy. It was dumb. I've talked this through with a lot of folks. I've listened to a lot of folks on it, and just done that. Listened, smart folks, and I just can't. With the return that you got, man, there should have been picks in there. There should have been another young player. In the end, he got fleeced by his boy Pelinka. That's what happened.
It's one of those ones where I want the story 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, what we know is it wasn't. You know, I'm glad it's done now. McMahon, you know, did a piece on it, and I think we're all here now. I think early on, because it was so crazy.
Well, Linda, that was the other thing. Did you see they fired the entire health staff this year?
Yeah, that. But I think early on, because it was so crazy, a lot of people were saying, "Well, there's no way Nico did this, right? This is him taking the rap for something that ownership did." I think it's become clear, crystal clear, through the reporting. This is personal. This was how Nico felt about Doncic, and even if that's the case. I mean, Doncic had conditioning issues coming into the season. His body is not right. We heard J.J. Redick even essentially point the finger at him when it's talking about conditioning next season.
Yep.
But even if you felt like that, like we're not going to remain a contender, a championship-level team with him, you got to get more for him. That just because that's what they got. Bobby Marks went through the whole – people at ESPN, we talked about it. Everybody did, you know, potential – what you could have got from other teams.
Man. Well, I mean, to Michael, think about this. Man. What, 90% of where OKC is right now is just the Paul George trade?
Yeah.
I mean, it was an awful return, especially for a guy that you just rode his back to a finals. What are we talking about here? I mean, there's no ways around it.
The only thing I could get out of that is they didn't want it to leak out that they were shopping Luka. And they basically made that deal happen.
But what
is
about,
it
what
they
about the
or is it
that the
Rob?
Deal was better at first.
So I'm with you.
Here's the thing, though. If you talk me into Pelinka didn't want it out, that I buy. Because Pelinka knows if this thing goes to market, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
And you read the initial reporting of, like, listen, you don't want to call Milwaukee. You don't want to call. He started going through it. But what still has never made sense to me, because Nico has admitted as such, he did not think the reaction was going to be like this.
Yeah.
Which is another notch in the con column for what do you mean you don't know your fan base is going to react this way? You are an adept general manager. You've got a great reputation in the league after what you just did at the trade deadline last year. You turned that team that was a mess defensively into a juggernaut after the trade deadline defensively that went all the way to the freaking finals. Like, you'd built up an incredible credibility at that point, and that's what I'm saying, man. And so for you to tell us that you didn't understand that, that's not good enough. You know, to me, in the end, you didn't get enough. You made the decision you're moving on from Luka. Okay, we're past that. We think that wasn't too smart based on it looked like a decent enough shape last year to get you to the finals. But, okay, you've decided it. If you're going to keep this quiet with Pelinka, it better be a good enough haul to justify not opening it up and seeing what the market would have offered you for Luka. That wasn't enough, what they got back. I get that Christie is a good young player. A lot of people like him. Man, you needed picks. You needed another young guy, you know. Maybe you needed AR in there. I don't know. But you needed more.
I think, though, the other thing that I thought was striking. Listen, Luka's conditioning's a problem.
But
this idea that, like, all of a sudden Nico was justified. And then what was so bizarre to me was the first round. I felt like the entire Laker post-mortem organizationally was, this is on Luka, and I'm sitting there going, I'm sorry, I missed the part.
Well,
you killed the Williams deal. You had
where's the big?
Where's your center?
Rudy had 27 and 24. Like, that was
Rudy Gobert had the greatest Rudy Gobert playoff game we've ever seen, and they were acting like Luka's too fat. It's like, am I taking crazy pills here?
Well, no, you're not. And let's be real. For as much as we pick on him, and J.J. Redick picked Perks because there's nobody else on that Lakers team that ain't in shape. I mean, J.J. Redick went right after him after the season. Luka, we know this too, but we never factor it. He doesn't play a game where he's having to jump over you or blow by you. He is effective, frankly, out of shape. Because that's his game. His game has never been
predicated. Got more junk in the trunk. He can do that little back down move when he's got a little more weight on him.
I mean, he's like Boris Diaw on steroids. You know, Boris went from guard to like big dude.
Yep.
But my point is effective at the size you are. If Luka was a guy, man, that was a thing. You saw him, you know, and yes, his body in terms of some of the injuries, you know, you could factor that stuff in. But if he was a guy that you look like and you say, well, he's just fat and out of shape, usually he's dunking on people. Usually he's crossing them over and blowing. Mm. That's never been his game. He plays the kind of game I've compared Cade Cunningham to him, where it's his own pace, and you're Jaylen never going to speed him up. And those kind of guys, yeah, even if they're a little pudgy, they can be effective in this league. We just saw it last year. So Luka's never going to be that guy. Right, this unbelievable LeBron-like body, and now his game's changed. This is how his game is based. So this idea that he's never going to work himself into a shape where he's top level, dude, Luka is top level at the size that he's at. Sure, he needs to take his off-season conditioning more seriously. This injury stuff is serious. But come on, man. I mean, this is not a guy you poke at. You're waiting for him to become Michael Jordan athletically. That was never going to happen. And so it's stupid all the way around, and you can call it ballsy. You can also call it dumb.
No, then you contrast it with here. It's like the thought of having an exit interview with either Kleiman or whoever the coach is, just totally ripping the players. It's like, whereas now, like, they break their backs trying to get out of the way, trying to not blame the players. It's like that was just such a stark contrast. Like in the because we went right from the climate exit interview to that one, I was like, wow, those are two very different ways of handling this.
I mean, I don't know how much longer we'll see. And I think a lot of it was tied to LeBron, obviously him getting the job, but I don't know how much longer that JJ's arrogance is going to serve him well in this league, throwing guys under bus. The guy that, let's be real, he's LA's next star that they're building around, Luka. The LeBron days are numbered. And so this idea that JJ now in his first year, I mean, in his first essentially, you know, stretch with this guy is going to challenge Luka. How did Luka take that as, oh, it's a challenge from a coach that I already respect, or man, that's single-handedly picking on me. Sure, I was broken up, but here's a new guy. I don't even have a relationship with him yet. Who's basically pointing the finger at me, a guy who played five dudes for 24. We've never seen it before in modern NBA history. You're playing all five of your guys. One of them's 40 years old. All 24 minutes of a second half. I mean, you're getting dispatched in embarrassing fashion. And rather than listen, this was on me. You know, in the way that it should have been, it was a lot of throwing guys under the bus. It was walking out of press conference. It was thinking he's Popovich already in terms of I can be arrogant with media. I've been correcting you guys since you made me a member of it. I mean, I remember on First Take telling Stephen A. and those guys, this is how you need to be talking about basketball. He's always been that way, much of it because of his basketball brain, how effective he was as a player. I just don't know that it's going to serve him this well this early in his coaching tenure, having proven nothing to this point.
He's got to learn the hierarchy, man. He's got to learn that Luki.
But, like, yo, it was so bizarre.
Luka's about to be his go-to. He better get that right pretty quickly. And I just thought that was to single him out the way he did because, again, there's not another Lakers player on that team that's not in shape. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is getting up and down the floor. He was clearly pointing that at Luka. Man, Luka wasn't their issue in the end. The roster was. The fact that you didn't trust any of the centers on the team, wouldn't go back to Jackson Hayes. I mean, Luka makes guys better. No, Jackson Hayes isn't all of them going to become a stud for you. But you can't have LeBron James out there trying to stop their three centers, a 40-year-old, for, you know, entire second half. It was ridiculous. So the things he was asking of the, you know, of those guys was ridiculous. It was arrogance. I'm with Wendy. It was childish in a way he handled that series. And then you follow it up by exiting out, slapping Luka on the way out. I just don't think it was very smart of him.
The reality is your explanation's probably right. Like, it's childish. It's a guy that has actually had more examples of kind of being arrogant and I know better.
That's who,
like,
he is.
But yes, it was so bizarre to me that I was like, do they think that they're actually not going to re-sign Luka? Like, it was like, you know what I mean? Because, like, in the end, I think because you have 2 years left.
Yeah, he's a year. Him and Jaren were the same years coming in the league, but he's a year after him because 5-year deal.
Correct.
Four. Yep.
Like, I was just, I was like, do they, because it was just so bizarre to me. Because I would think they'd be kind of in the courting Luka.
Got to stay on his good side.
You know what I mean? Like, it was just so bizarre. I was like, I just couldn't believe what I was watching. I was like,
Pauline could be stupid. He's about to build, he's guaranteed this thing and having the hot thing in LA for another decade. Hopefully, Luka's doing his part by staying in shape. Right. But you now have your piece, your post-LeBron piece. You can move off LeBron now because you've got a piece in Luka that you just watched leave folks to find. And more importantly, that L.A. fan base will buy in. They now have their next star for the next decade. Of course, you're going to lock him in. You got a coach right now that's disrespecting him the first chance he got.
Are we officially putting P.J. Haggerty to bed now?
Yeah. What I like is what we hear is that Memphis, and I think Hidman Hoops at it first, is back. They've backed off because I think it's the right time to do that. What you've brought in now in terms of Sincere Parker, but really Dub McDaniel, the guy who's going to have the ball in his hands the most, I don't see it working still with P.J. Haggerty at this point. Not that you wouldn't. I mean, the man was a second-team AP All-American. Maybe find a way if P.J. Haggerty told you, called up right now and said, I'm in. I mean, not that you wouldn't tell, find a way to get it done. But remember, P.J. Haggerty wanted not just $4 million, apparently 70% of the time at point guard. I keep pointing to the 100 turnovers he had last year, as effective as he was as a scorer, as a shooting guard. Again, second-team AP All-American, you can't argue that. Great college basketball player. He had 100-plus turnovers. If you're talking about putting him at point guard, where does that leave Dub McDaniel and everybody else? And quite frankly, Jeffrey, I'm not sure if I want him at point guard 70% of the time. With what Penny has done, I think pretty solidly so, considering when you got in the race, because you had to earmark that money for PJ, and he didn't jump in the portal till late. I think you've got enough right now to say, you know what? You know, if this guy at this point – some reporting out there that indicates they've offered him Memphis has offered the most guaranteed, and he's still not taking it. When you know how strapped they are for you, Memphis is for you in terms of cash with their budget compared to others, they're willing to go up to three with basically a bonus $3 million that's reserved just for you, and you haven't already jumped on this. No, we need to move on, and particularly with what we've already gotten, and focus our efforts on trying to get this waiver for Dane Danger, because at this point, like we talked about, Jeffrey, I think it was me, you, and Cobb at one point, they come to this conclusion. It's more important with what you've now put on the roster, just having Bradshaw, a former five-star big, but who's proven nothing in college in terms of front court guys that you can depend on. It seems so important right now to get Dane Danger back. And maybe that door is a little bit more ajar, with some of these cases recently that have gotten the approval than we previously thought. I'm hopeful they get him. If you get Dane Danger, who was playing at an All-American level at the end of the season, especially that first half against Colorado State, I like this team again. Certainly to win the AAC, and then we'll see where it goes from there. What's going to be tough is getting a 5, right? Going 10-3 with one of the toughest non-conference schedules every year when you're flipping your roster. So hopefully some of these guys, Tedford, we'll see some of these others. Some of the guys that Penny's brought in, Ashton Hardaway coming back. You're going to be multiple-year guys for you, so you're getting more continuity as you're flipping these guys. For the most part, I think Penny's done a good job considering when he got in the fight.
Well, and also we find out they're going to the Bahamar, and we know Purdue, we know Wake.
Yeah, I'm sure Purdue's going to get Wake, right, because Purdue's going to get whatever's easiest to get to that, and it's only two games, but whatever's easiest to get that title game. It was Tennessee last year. Tennessee Gonzaga, was it? Maybe. Anyway.
That sounds right. And then is the other rumor Tech?
Opposite them. Yeah. I have no idea who the other team's going to be. My hope is you're opposite them. John tells me they've got everything back, including Braden. So all of their, what is it, two All-American guys?
Burzello, somebody put him as his preseason one. Yeah.
I mean, it's based on how much newness you'll have again, you're gambling in a way. When you're replacing 10 and 11, clearly you're not in a way you are with chemistry every year. We saw it 2 years ago where it went bad on you by February. Looked good for a while. That chemistry thing is real, especially when guys are getting paid and you got some that you gotten to a point in the season where they're getting paid more, but they're performing at a rate that's, lesser than the guys who are getting less. And so that, you could throw all kinds of wrenches into it. So that's, you're hopeful that, that you can gel as well as that team did last year. It's not. There's no promise that every year you're going to get a guy like Tyrese Hunter, who empowered
P.J. Haggerty, and was a veteran enough in terms of college basketball, the kind of point guard that understood I need to take, as we phrased it, this step back right now in leading and let P.J. roll. There's no promise that Sincere and Doug are going to, you know, understand it like that. That's the hope. But hopefully you're keeping some of these guys, you know, going forward a couple more years. We hope that at one point for P.J. Haggerty. But, man, I mean, this NIL era, man, it's all about the dollars, brother.
Jason, we appreciate it, my man.
Y'all take care. Keep up the great work.
Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. We come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. For today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I got to go to one of the all-time truth tellers, one of the fine, upstanding men in the world of only college football, but, yes, just absolutely the United States of America. That's Coach Urban Meyer, who said, if you lie to the NCAA, your career should be over. Really, Urban? Tell me how many times you told the truth. You know, like when you pointed the finger at Jeremy Fowler for pointing out how many felons you had on your team and you said, you're the bad guy, when you literally had a murderer on your team who, by the way, shot people in the face under your watch. At least, Urban, you're solving the real problems out there. Don't tell these stories. Tell your story. Appreciate you being here, DeMichael.
Of course.
If y'all missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for DeMichael, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.